Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Here's the payoff. This one is drilled to left. Collins going back at the wall. It is gone! Chase Mydron let him know. A three-run shot as the Sox take their first lead of the night here in the fifth.
And the offense has come to life. Hit a couple of home runs this inning to go with a double and a single. And five on the board.
Hey, goodbye. Na 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 na. Na 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 na.
And you got a very happy Chase. His third home run of the year.
Was that Stoney trying to interrupt the singing as quickly as he could? Or is that just me? Is that just what I heard? I'm gonna send that snippet. Let's send that to Nancy Faust. See how she feels about. Johnson, he sounded pretty good. John Triffin singing along with Nana, Hey Hey.
Gotta mix it up.
Steam. It sounded like Mitch Rosen right there. Gotta mix it up.
Gotta mix it up.
You know.
Fun. Energy, play the hits.
Oh,
Russ Dorsey is here. What's up, Russ Dorsey? We're hanging out. We're talking baseball. Lots of stuff to come. We'll talk some basketball. We'll talk some football, too. You said before the show in our pregame meeting that the White Sox have graduated for you.
Yes. I feel like the Chicago White Sox, after, I think 2024 was tearing it down to the studs. Shout out to studs.
Everybody's always tearing it down to
you
him.
Know, all that was left was Adam Straczynski. Tearing it down to the studs.
You see that Bears offense before Ben Johnson really started building it up? It was just studs. That's all it was.
So tearing it down to the studs. And then last year, as you start to see these young dudes get to the big league level, you see the vision of what it could look like. Guys getting their feet wet. You see the talent. You see what Colson Montgomery did in the second half. Chase Mydron getting the big league level. You see Teal and Caro.
So you're talking about watching the big league product alone.
Yes. Starting from the time it was barren in 24.
I think that's key because I think a lot of Sox fans, and I just as an observer, was trying to zoom out and watch as much as I could. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think about the thing holistically. But most people just watch the big league club,
yeah,
to your point.
Exactly.
So what it was like last year.
Yeah, so then you could see what they were trying to build after what was the most losses in the history of Major League Baseball. And this year, you're seeing a team that has graduated now from purely rebuilding team that would be outgunned on a nightly basis to now, they are a team that gives you 27 outs each and every night. They are fun, grindy, interesting, fun to watch baseball team. And I think that's a good spot. That doesn't mean that they're the rebuild is over and you're done. No. That means that the team that you watch on a nightly basis, if you're a diehard White Sox fan,
yeah,
like my dad, doesn't have to turn the game off in the third inning. You're watching all nine. You're watching all 27 outs. Mm-hmm. And as you talked about before the break, this team can be down 3-4 runs, and they feel like they can come back.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think I have to see, we've had the good opportunity here in town over the last 15 years to see multiple rebuilds.
Yeah.
To see Theo come in here and tear it down and build it back up on the north side. And I remember having to tell people in 2013, 2014, hey, I'm sorry, but it's not about your time on the couch right now. It's not what it's about. This, like, what the org is doing is not about you. And then at a certain point, it transitions. And we've had to tell White Sox fans that twice,
yeah,
in the last 9 years. Because for a while there with Rick Hahn, it wasn't about your life on the couch watching the games every night. And then all of a sudden it was. And then you were asked again to sacrifice your...
Mired in mediocrity.
Yeah, you had to sacrifice it again 3 years ago to just accept that, all right, Chris Getz is changing some things, okay. But yeah, you're right now. Like, so the diehard Sox fans out there who've said, I want to see it on the field, now they're seeing it on
exactly
the field.
Exactly, and you feel much better about the process. Right. When you're losing 121 games,
yeah, man, it's hard.
It's hard to listen to somebody tell you about the process. Now, when you're beating good teams, when you're winning series, yeah, when you have a guy in Murakami that's hitting the ball in the ballpark every other night, and you have these young players that are, you know, and this is a big thing for me. Montgomery and Mydroth and Teal and Caro and Schultz, those guys got to come up in the minor leagues together. And now they're in the big leagues together and starting to have success together.
Well, that's a big deal for the cultural conversation from last segment as well.
And those guys are now realizing who they are as players, where you put in a Miguel Vargas into that equation as well, and starting to have that success. And these guys weren't top prospects for no reason. They have talent, and now you're starting to see that talent mesh.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a good point. And I wonder what the perception is then, because there have been times over the past couple years that we put on the air, say, Brian Bannister. Mm-hmm. And I remember Lawrence saying, Lawrence will be back tomorrow, everybody. It's Russ Dorsey in with Spiegs.
Where's Lawrence?
He's on vacation. All right,
I'm sorry.
Dave?
I'm sorry, Waddy.
Jeez, so antsy. He doesn't like Spiegel and Company.
Spiegel and Company.
I remember Lawrence saying, if you want to feel some hope, White Sox fans, you listen to Brian Bannister. But now, the next time we have Bannister on, if he talks to you about Hagen Smith or Tanner McDougal or whoever else, you can be like, well, he was right about Noah Schultz. I'm watching that guy who's here. He told me about Grant Taylor. I'm watching that guy who's here, giving him what, an inning and two-thirds last night, getting out of a couple spots.
Your multi-inning weapon.
Yeah.
You need those.
Yeah, you do. So, yeah, no, it's a watchable thing on a nightly basis.
And sometimes I think because we live here and we watch it on a nightly basis, you can get into this. Maybe the rest of the world doesn't feel like that. When I talk to people about the Chicago White Sox right now, people like what they've been able to do. Like, I had a guy a couple of days ago said, hey, man, that Sox system is really talented. And many believe that the most talented player isn't even in the big league level yet in Brandon Montgomery.
Man, I can't wait for fans to get a look at him. That's
good
a
player.
That, right? So that is a serious... He's in Charlotte right now.
Yes. Got promoted, tore it up in Birmingham.
He won Player of the Month in Birmingham.
Yes, he did.
In the Southern League. Got promoted to Charlotte, even though they don't have a traject machine. So sad.
Yeah.
So sad. Guy loves a traject machine, but they don't have one in Charlotte. That came up on the morning show, right?
We keep talking about the Sox doing what they're doing, and they're not healthy fully. And Kyle Teal hitting a home run at AAA Charlotte last night reminded you that help is on the way.
Traject machine. It went through your head. You got to admit.
Yes.
That little traject machine.
The traject machine.
Yes. It apparently, it costs teams $15,000 to $20,000 a month. No one's got one at home.
How can that be possible?
That's Traject what machine. That's what it costs. You got to lease it from Traject for $15,000 to $20,000 a month. It's got to be a 3-year lease. You're looking at $500,000 to $700,000, and only 11 orgs around baseball at last count, having done the research, have one at AAA. The White Sox are not one. Ryan Fuller told us on Hit and Run the other day, your show, Russ, Ryan Fuller told us the other day, he said we should have a fundraiser for him so he could raise some money to get a Traject machine in Charlotte.
All I heard is cha-ching. Shout out to Traject. They have a great business model. You got to lease it from me. You got to have a 3-year deal. They're raking in the money.
Seriously, man. And then you got to give it back to them after 3 years.
But also for everybody out there listening, the Traject machine, it's a... I was going to say contraption. That sounded like a 50-year-old man. Yeah. It is a pitching machine that allows you to project the image of any pitcher in Major League Baseball.
And replicate their stuff.
Correct.
From arm slot to spin rate, everything.
If I'm a hitter and I know I'm going to face Paul Skeens tonight, I need to see that splinker 20 times. I can go down to the cage, turn on the Traject machine, and see Paul Skeens in all his glory throwing splinkers.
Can you imagine if you're at AAA and you're Braden Montgomery and you're about to come up and, you know, face the Twins and Joe Ryan, and you know that's going to be your big league debut. You could ask the pitching coach to load Joe Ryan up on the old Traject machine.
Load up Bailey Ober.
Yeah. Oh, I like Bailey
Ober.
Had
a good night last night.
They did.
10 punchies.
Or Mick Abel when he comes off the injured list, right? But you can't do it.
No.
Because you don't have one.
It's one of those things that teams at the big league level, I don't believe there's a team that doesn't have one at this point.
Everyone has one on the big league level.
But at the minor league level, it is a select few teams that in, you talk about minor league investments, investments in R&D. Like, these are the things that you talk about. So teams that are very technologically sound, what the Miami Marlins have been able to do.
Right.
What the Rays have done for years.
Without
even
a doubt.
During the Andrew Friedman regime. And you think about all the teams that we're talking about. Andrew Friedman was in Tampa.
Of course.
And then you
so
have
you know
Eric
the Dodgers
then
have
you have Eric
AAA.
Neander there now. You have Peter Bindix in Miami. Yeah. From the Tampa tree. So you see how all the different things that have been sprinkled around Major League Baseball from that tree.
This continues to be my best idea, is that Justin Ishbia needs to go down to the shed and unplug one of the traject machines he has for his kids over there and just fly it on the private jet down to Charlotte himself.
You have some, hey, do we have in the garage?
Yeah.
Next to the lawnmower, do we have a traject machine?
Yeah, it's behind those three extra PS5s as backups.
Ship that thing to 35th and Shields.
Send it over there. Send it over there. He's Russ Dorsey. I'm Matt Spiegel. It is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. The Cubs aren't hitting. Everybody panic. That story next.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Grounder up the middle, backhanded, Montauk throws, ball game. White Sox sweep the Royals. And have now won five in a row. White Sox are the hottest team in Major League Baseball right now.
That call courtesy of John Schriffen on CHSN. We go to our hotline, and that is where we are happy to be joined on this Crosstown Friday by the White Sox manager, Will Venable. Will, thanks for coming on with us today.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Hi, Layla.
Hey, I haven't gotten to talk to you since you got the job, so congratulations to you and Catherine and the family, and thank you for putting up with me as a rookie sideline reporter with the Padres and also teaching me both with your time at the Cubs and then also in baseball. I'm very happy to see what's gone on with you in your career and then leading up to even the series today.
No, thanks so much, Lily. I appreciate it.
We had to play too short for you because you're from the Bay Area, but we started our show with Knuck If You Buck. I'm just going to say this. I think the potential for crowd energy is pretty high tonight and this weekend. What do you anticipate when it comes to the atmosphere on the South Side?
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. It should be electric in there. You know, it always is. And, you know, having our guys come into this series in a good spot, feeling like we're playing good baseball should be really exciting.
Well, I got to ask you, because I think you've been playing such a clean version of baseball these last couple of weeks compared to maybe what we saw at the beginning of the season. What do you think has been the biggest difference in the way that you've played in winning six of your last eight series and 11 out of your last 15?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, number one, the guys continue to come to the ballpark with really good energy. You know, obviously, they're a connected group, which is great. But then you got to go out there and you got to execute. You got to make plays. You know, you look at some of the underlying things that our guys are doing, you know, at the plate and swing decisions, defensively with first step stuff, you know, on the mound with, you know, maintaining count leverage. There's just a lot of good stuff going on, and it's really coming from every department, every player on the field.
I'm glad you brought up the count leverage too, Will, because I feel like this was a really good example last night of your team seeing a quality pitcher for a second time this season in Chris Bubich, the Royals pitcher. What were you able to get from him the first time around you guys saw him, and then to be able to have a much better performance as a lineup against him this time?
Yeah, you know, I thought we had a good game plan on the first go around. He just kind of dominated us, and it was really about the fastball. You know, we just got beat with a ton of fastballs in the zone, and so that was an even greater point of emphasis this time around. And, you know, the game planning was really good. Credit to Show and the hitting department, but these guys went out and did it. You know, we just saw guys being aggressive to the fastball in the zone. We're able to negotiate some pitches on the edges of the zone and just put together really quality at bats and got the pitch count up.
That's something that, well, I remember you and I talking about in San Diego was your approach to the fastball. I feel like we're starting to see a team have a defined approach when it comes to that. I know each individual is different, but what do you think about just the way that your lineup has been able to approach it, have some defined at-bats that you talked about, and just really kind of adding to the example of last night's game?
Yeah, you know, they're committed to it. We know that on both sides of the ball, you know, fastballs are going to be a really important part of it. On the pitching mound, you know, be able to command your fastball, and then on the hitting side, being able to move fastballs forward. And so these guys are committed to it. They go out, again, with Show's leadership on the hitting side. They go out and they train it well. You know, they know which areas they're looking for, how to solve for different types of fastball. So it's really just part of kind of what we do every day, and they're finding different solutions to go out there and execute in the games.
Listen, well, I want to talk about Munetaka Murakami, and he's a big part of your success this season. But I do want to talk about somebody else that spent some time recently in Japan. Last night's starting pitcher, Anthony Kay, this is a journeyman by definition. The fact that he hasn't been in the major leagues, but he's out here now coming off his first career quality start and now a 2.25 ERA in the month of May. What has been the difference this time around for Anthony Kay and his performance in your rotation?
Yeah, I think just throwing strikes, really. You know, he's got really good stuff, and you could say this about really all of our pitchers. You know, they have good enough stuff. When they're in the zone, they can be really effective, and we've seen that with Anthony, where early on, you know, maybe just not the best command of his stuff. You know, obviously that's something that he prioritizes and he's working on, but these last few, he's really been able to execute, you know, mixing different pitches, good use of the fastball, but it's all been in the zone and extremely competitive.
We are talking to the White Sox manager, Will Venable, on this Crosstown Friday here on Raheemy, Harris, and Grody. And Will, we also mentioned last night in the game how a little bit of a different lineup, and we see Randall Grichuk batting cleanup, and then you're able to get that production out of not just Grichuk's spot when he's in the lineup, but also you pinch hit for Sam Antonacci. He gets a hustle double. What do you think about just being able to get that kind of production in that spot specifically for extra base production?
Yeah, it's huge, you know, and for us, obviously, we got the guys in the middle there that have been really consistent with Mooney and Vargas and Colson. But you look throughout our lineup, the guys that are on our bench as well, you know, everyone is doing their job. Everyone is making an impact. I think a lot of it even shows up, you know, without results. You know, guys are grinding at bats, are really just passing the baton to the next guy. And that's what it takes. You know, that's why we have had chances to win some of these games, is because, you know, whether these guys are on the bench or in the game at the bottom of the lineup, they're doing everything they can to make an impact and contribute.
Speaking of Sam, I saw he came up after that pinch hit double a little bit lame, but I think after the game you said he just got hit by a pitch and that he was dealing with that. I mean, is he good to go? Is he good for this series?
Yeah, he should be good to go. We're going to get him out there, run around a little bit before the game, but he's in the lineup. He should be fine. It was just you know, a contusion from the hit by pitch, no soft tissue stuff. So, you know, he'll be ready to go.
And then a bigger question I have, and I think it's one that all White Sox fans have been waiting on, is what's the latest you could tell us about Kyle Teal down in AAA as he rehabs and the chances that maybe we see him this weekend?
You know, I think that we're probably not going to see him this weekend. You know, we got to make sure that he's in a good spot. He has a lot of boxes still to check. You know, he's played the last 3 days. He caught, then DH, then caught yesterday. He gets the day off today, and then we'll catch a bigger chunk of the game tomorrow. So as much as we love Kyle, as soon as we can, you know, we got to make sure that he's in a good spot. Missed a lot of spring training, a lot of time, obviously, with his hamstring. So he'll be back soon.
Well, in the meantime, we've talked about it. Your lineup has been able to pick up, you know, and be able to have the next man up mentality. These are good problems to have when you consider, you know, these are some tough decisions you may have to make once Teal is healthy.
Yeah, you know, that's part of this, you know, and, you know, every day in this league, a lot of things can happen. And so, you know, whenever it is time for some of these guys on the IL to come back, you know, you make the decision you got to make. And if you have tough decisions to make, you know, that can be a good thing, because that means a lot of guys are playing well. So we'll see when we get there. But in the meantime, we'll just keep pushing here.
Well, what's been the biggest thing that you learned going from year one to year two that you feel like has helped implement a winning approach to getting you over 500 here in your second season?
You know, I think we came into spring training with just a lot more clarity around the program and what we wanted to do. You know, we made some changes in staff. You know, we had a year with the group to understand the details that we wanted to prioritize with them. And then, you know, we kind of set the tone in spring training, but it's really just these guys and their ability to connect and go out there and play with a lot of energy. You know, it's just really fun to watch on a nightly basis that these guys, whether we're up or we're down, they're really excited to go out and play baseball. And that kind of youthful energy is something that we've leaned into and something that really has been the biggest difference maker for us.
You can tell the vibe in the dugout. You know, we've seen it in the clubhouse as well. Brooke Fletcher, the CHSN reporter, noted the camaraderie, Will, in the clubhouse, the energy. I think she called it like a college clubhouse with all the young guys. What can you say about just this group, this team, and the attitudes that you've seen all these players play with?
Yeah, it's fun to be around, you know, and they bring so much energy to each other. You know, it's just it's really fun to watch because there's so much that's put into, you know, yourself to be able to prepare for your moment and your opportunity. And the great thing about our guys is that they do all that and they work extremely hard, but they also give so much energy to their teammates and the way that they communicate and support each other and they hold themselves accountable. It's just really fun to watch. It's fun to be around. And you know, when it results in winning baseball, it's even more special.
Now, this was unveiled during one of the postgame shows and on the White Sox podcast, the Mike Vassell magic wand. I've seen it. I've seen him wave it at people in the dugout. What are its magic powers and how effective do you think it is?
You know, I don't know specifically what the wand brings, except for just channeling Vassell's energy, which is pretty special in itself. You know, this is a guy that, you know, has made an impact, as much of an impact as you can make for not being on the field. You know, and he's really, you know, kind of the heart and soul of that club and the spirit that they bring to the dugout and the clubhouse and the field every day.
I think it might be a wins above replacement, at least like a one and a half, the wand, if I had to judge
easily.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a 5-war wand. I'm not quite sure yet. We just have to get to the end of the season.
No doubt.
Will Venable joining us, the manager of the Chicago White Sox, ahead of his team's big series against the Cubs, the Crosstown Classic. The White Sox, the hottest team in baseball, longest active winning streak in baseball at 5 straight dubs after sweeping the Royals out of town. Speaking of war, you got a guy on your team with a 2.6 B war, Davis Martin, who has burst onto the scene. And I'm curious as to what you think has been the biggest key to his jump this season. And he's really, I know it's only a fourth of the way through the season, but it's not that early, Will, to think that he's in the mix for All-Star consideration, even Cy Young consideration.
Yeah, he's been amazing, you know, and really right from the beginning in my relationship with Davis, just been clear that he's very professional, has a really clear understanding of how to attack hitters. He's fearless and he throws a ton of strikes. And, you know, that is obviously kind of like the foundation of what he's been doing. But then you look at some of you know, the metrics on the slider and some of these other pitches, and he just got really good stuff right now on top of throwing strikes. So he always feels like he's in control. When there's traffic, he's able to navigate it and just one of those guys that, you know, pretty quickly here this year, you just feel really confident when he's out there that he's going to pitch deep in games, he's going to be effective and give you a chance to win.
How rare is it to have a guy with a pitch mix that deep mm-hmm. that can throw seemingly anything in any count?
Yeah, it's rare, you know, and I think for a lot of these guys, you know, you try and, you know, get them into the zone and you might have to prioritize a pitch or two to make sure that they can do that. And he seems to be able to throw everything in the zone. And I think that, you know, as he, you know, goes from team to team and finds different ways to attack hitters, it just gives him more tools to go out there and attack guys with. And I think that that's a big part of why he's able to be so successful. He's just got a lot of different ways to beat you.
Well, I think a good example of what we've seen out of the success of the Sox in the last month especially has been how measures you had to take at the beginning of the season, like, for example, using Grant Taylor as an opener for a stretch, was just a Band-Aid. You know, it didn't end up having to be something you did into perpetuity. It didn't even have to be something you did for a few weeks. How important were those adjustments that were made at the beginning of the season, you know, just using that to help to get these starting pitchers to where they are right now?
Yeah, I think it was huge, you know, and there was a lot of stuff that we did just because we needed to find out kind of where we were at with things. And so we went into this asking guys to be flexible, not to look too deep into, you know, kind of how we were using guys or playing time up front early, knowing that we were going to get settled into kind of roles and responsibilities that fit our club. And so whether it was, you know, using Acuna as shortstop or using Grant as an opener, just mixing and matching here and there, we had to go through some stuff to figure it out and get settled here. So really excited that we did find a good spot here where guys seem like they're really taken to their roles. They have an understanding of what their job is on a daily basis, and they're going out and executing.
What were some of those conversations like? Like when you had to manage that initially to then learning what you found out for you and then ultimately how you're seeing them perform now?
Yeah, you know, just try to be upfront with the guys, you know, and we know that consistency is something that is really important to guys, and to be able to get in your routine and know what to expect with your role is important. At the same time, you know, the first couple series, we just didn't feel like we were there and needed to, you know, just make sure that, you know, we had an understanding of how this group was going to fit together. The guys did a great job of being patient. Our coaches did a good job of communicating. And really, you know, the result is now that you got a bunch of guys who are playing selfless baseball, willing to go out and contribute in any way possible. And at the same time, we're kind of giving them a little more consistency in what their roles are.
I'm curious if you're more surprised about the way that you've been able to play since that 1-5 start, or just the way that the rest of the American League has played all season long, kind of hovering around 500 and keeping you in play when you were struggling.
Yeah, no, you know, that first couple of series, we definitely got smacked in the mouth there, you know, and after a really productive spring training where we felt really confident that we were going about it the right way, that our group was working on the right things, we were really just challenged to stay the course, you know, and I thought, you know, from our players to our coaching staff, everyone did a really good job of doing that, knowing that that was more of an aberration and not, you know, who we were. And then very quickly, we were able to get back on track and be the club that we, you know, went into the season thinking that we could be. So, you know, credit to the group for just staying on track. And, you know, baseball is a long season. You know, we know we have some adversity that we'll have to face in the future here. And, you know, just really excited that the group that we have, you know, and the energy that they bring to help us get through those times.
And, Will, I mentioned this. You were a great teacher for a reporter like me when you were a player in San Diego. You continued to be that way all of your playing career. Then you were that way when you were an assistant. I remember talking to you with the Cubs. You end up with the Red Sox as well before you go to the White Sox. I know you worked with Bruce Bochy too, which was really cool. So that said, you know, your career has evolved, but you've always had that same kind of learning and teaching mentality. To see this get put together in this way, where I feel like your team is also taking that on, and you know you're evolving as well with them, you know, what have you learned about yourself over the span from then to now, and then how do you compare yourself at this point right now this year with me, and maybe even when you started with the White Sox or when you started back with the Cubs, since it is crosstown, when you decided to get on a coaching staff?
Yeah, no, thanks. You know, I think it's just one of those things where, you know, my position, whatever it's been in baseball, obviously there's just so much in this game to learn and continue to grow. And some of the best groups that I've been around, some of the best people that I've been around are people that continue to learn and continue to grow. And that's something that, you know, I bring to the field every day. But really, you know, our group, you know, behaves like that as well. You know, that's just part of who we are. You know, whether things go well on the field or poorly, there's always things for us to learn and grow from. And that's something really from day one last year that our whole group took to. Our staff does a good job of, you know, giving feedback, making adjustments, and going attacking problems differently. So, you know, that's just kind of part of baseball, I feel like. And, you know, good teams, good players, good coaches, you know, are always learning and always growing.
Well, Will, thank you again for joining us. This has been a lot of fun to talk to you, too. And Marshall has one more question. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I just wanted to ask you one more question, Will, about Colson Montgomery, because I know early in the season there was a lot of third base mixed in with shortstop, but of late it seems like he's primarily playing at shortstop. And by the metrics, he's been one of the best defensive shortstops in baseball. I'm curious as to if you're still tinkering with that, because he did play a couple of games at third base earlier this month, or has he secured himself as the everyday shortstop?
No, Colson's our shortstop. You know, you'll find when Mooney has a day off or Vardy has a day off, Colson's going to have to play third base. And so in the rare instances that that happens, you will see him move over there early on in the year. It was more of, you know, us trying to figure out how our group was going to fit together. And Colson, as good of a shortstop as he is, he may be even a better third baseman. But as our infield defense and our infielders have kind of stabilized and we understand who's going to be out there on a daily basis, you know, he's going to be out there every day at shortstop. But again, in the rare cases that Mooney or Vargas have a day off, we'll shift him over to third.
Makes sense. Makes sense. All the sense in the world. I appreciate the clarification.
Yeah, and Will, thank you again. It has been really fun to have worked with you and have to see you come up through the ranks. Thank you for teaching me so much as a young reporter. Thanks for coming on today. And I didn't call you Wheel, so I feel like I've progressed in that as well.
Oh, no, that's great. And thank you so much, Layla. Thank you, guys, and appreciate having me on.
See, the courtesy laugh out of Will every time I call him Wheel. See, that's who you are, Will Venable. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks, guys.
That is Will Venable, the White Sox manager, and very patient individual, I might add, who really did have to put up with me when I was a first-year baseball sideline reporter in San Diego.
Oh, I knew he was patient once I watched last season. I knew how patient he was.
It's been just tremendous to watch him rise through the ranks. And when he was with the Cubs, we would have a lot of conversations. Just again, if you had a question for him, he would tell you what was going on. He would teach you what he knew. And that's what I always appreciated about him. I'm not surprised in the least that he's in the role he is, just like Craig Counsell. You know, Craig Counsell rose through the ranks as a player and then as an assistant. And now we see him with the Cubs, and the dude makes his money for a reason. It's great to have two managers like this on both sides of town.
One of the reasons I'm excited about this particular matchup this weekend is I think this will show just how good of a manager both these guys are. And I think Chicago seemingly is really blessed right now in this moment as far as the baseball fortune for the north and the south sides of town.
I should have known he knew about Nuckafee Buck.
Was that a question? He's 43 years old. Of course he knows Nuckafee Buck.
I know. Will's put together, man. Will, like, went to Princeton.
Get you one who can do both.
And we've gotten, I can't reply on our text line right now because I don't know computers and stuff. But we've gotten a lot of funny texts, too. 847, Layla, how did you not go with Wands above replacement?
That's fair.
I don't know. Sometimes we're not on our game, guys. I'm sorry. Wands above replacement will be for the Mike Vassell magic wand. Coming up next year on Raheem Harrison Grody, it's also a massive day because the NFL schedule finally got released. Except maybe it was already released on TikTok. But we need to examine the Bears' schedule. The video was also fun. Shout out Roma Dunze. We'll do all that next.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, if I were a fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be very angry.
You know, I don't want fans to be angry. I'm not looking to foment White Sox anger. You're having a great moment. It's just that a couple things have popped up that make me think that maybe Justin Ishbia could inject a few dollars and maybe help out if these are things that Jerry Reinsdorf may not do. You know what I mean? You made the case beautifully on Friday, Ryan McGuffey, for a Munetaki Morikawa extension.
God bless you.
Go ahead and simplify that for people. Give me that.
It's a race against the clock. The uncertainty of 2027 puts you in a weird predicament, unlike past years, where you're not truly getting 2 years, at least that you know of, two controllable years because of the uncertainty of the future. There likely will not be a winter meetings. You're going to have a shutdown period where you're not even able to contact your own players. Hopefully there's no labor stoppage, but we can't guarantee that. And because of that, you can't let this guy walk or become a free agent without talking to you first. So because it's a race against the clock, I do feel like 2026, the calendar of 2026, is kind of in your favor to make that presentation.
Was talking to somebody today who does national baseball games and thoroughly believes that the McGonagall extension in Detroit, the Connor Griffin extension, maybe even some of the Cubs extensions, and thoroughly informed by this potential work stoppage, and that a Murakami extension absolutely would be hot, possibly be informed, backs up that thought process and says, go now. Go ahead. Do it now.
And the AAV of the first baseman is like $27 million a year. Right. We talked about some comps on Friday of Pete Alonso and Kyle Schwarber, even though they're older players.
Yep.
That those are probably, like, I think 5 for $150 million. I'm gonna keep saying that feels like the right.
And the only problem is that's double the biggest contract the White Sox have ever
given
out.
It shouldn't be a problem anymore.
It's probably a problem.
It sounds like what's out there is that the White Sox are interested or already have started having conversations with Casey Close and said agency. How serious or how far those talks have gone, we yet not know.
Did you say there was a tweet from over the weekend about somebody who ran into Justin Ishbia? Because the man is everywhere. I've now seen him twice. At Wrigley, sitting in the first row, 1914 club seats, with his son over his shoulders, just having a good time at a Cubs game. I'm like, well, that's interesting. Guy's about to own the White Sox, or is a partial owner now? No, just has a deal.
Just a minority
owner. But anyway, and there he is enjoying a Cubs game. But there he was out at the rate on Saturday for the first of two wins against Seattle.
Yeah, and I think it was after a home run, he's given a standing ovation. You saw there was another tweet, just him on video with his hat backwards. I'm like, there's a 48-year-old man enjoying a baseball game. Oh, and he's the owner in waiting. The tweet that you were referencing was a fan who had a brief interaction with Ishbia that said, hey, make sure we don't lose Munetaka Murakami. And his quote back, according to the tweet, was, not under my watch. So
maybe he comes up with 150 mil
or 75 of the 150. Like, what is the, you know?
Well, then you got to start thinking they would have to work something out as a business arrangement. The easiest thing would be for him to buy more minority shares of the ball club. And that would be the cash that is injected thereby. And then Jerry Reinsdorf and his people could then just funnel that towards the Murakami extension at that point. You could do it that way. But I don't know that that's even possible to do.
To my knowledge, the last minority shares that he was able to swoop up, because I think even Jerry's group was trying to buy as many as possible. To my knowledge, is that there are minority owners who are not willing to let those go just yet. And you
right.
can, I mean, and that's their right.
And we know why they don't want to let it go just yet.
That is correct.
Because the valuation of the White Sox, as it currently stands, is nowhere near the valuation of what the White Sox will be once it officially changes hands to Justin Ishbia. Hell, by then, there's probably going to be a salary cap after next year's carnage.
Yep.
And that's going to raise the valuation, so they stand to make a lot more money. So, of course, they're not going to sell more shares. So how else could the new owner, who's just the owner in waiting, inject money? He's already taken care of other stuff that he can. Oh, the land where Amtrak has some trains over there? I'll just go ahead and buy that.
Yeah.
I'll just go ahead and take care of that. I'll have that in my back pocket.
There were some stories a year ago that he did have that influx of cash when he took over more minority shares, become the principal minority owner, or however it's worded in the documents and the agreements to the future about 2029 and 2033 and when he could officially take over ownership. That his influx of cash helped pay off a large sum of White Sox debt ensued during the pandemic type years.
Well, that sounds like a very congenial relationship for Jerry Reinsdorf to have with the owner in waiting. But those are two men with very different approaches, very different profiles, and it's really interesting to think about how they would have to get along for more things like this to happen. There is a personal relationship component that would need to be in place for more of this to go into effect.
Because the easy part of this is, it's like, well, current owner has the hand-picked owner ready to go, so like anything he's helping is actually helping him, and it's not that simple. Like, that's what you're,
yes,
him saying let's make sure Murakami's 5 for $150 million in theory is a nice little handshake, two mm-hmm. buddies high-fiving and saying no problem.
Yeah,
but this is a business deal, not a buddy deal. That's the difference. That it's is a business deal and correct. Not a buddy deal.
I can tell you something I learned today, which is that when Justin Ishbia met the Pope, he made some comments, some public comments, about how he and the Pope talked for a while, and it was a wonderful experience, and he said, as I'm looking back on them now, I'm 48, right? So whether a new stadium occurs in 4 years or 34 years, I don't know, but I'm going to be involved in a stadium at some point with the White Sox. And I said to him, I said to the Pope, I says, I would love for you to be there and throw that first pitch. And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, thank you. And then he said, I'd love to, schedule permitting. So Ishbia continued to tell the Sun-Times, I asked him to bless the new stadium. I don't know when it's going to occur. I can't say an exact date, yada, yada. I asked him to bless and wish for many years of good fortune. I'm told that didn't go over great. Didn't go over great. That the guy who doesn't own the team yet was out there talking to the Pope and talking about talking to the Pope and saying, come to my stadium. It's not even your team yet.
But let me ask you.
But I'm just saying, the congenial relationship needed for these kinds of things may not necessarily be currently in place.
It's a weird dynamic. Because it's not a man who's retiring in Jerry, right? It's not like he's hitting 70 and saying, that's it, I'm washing my hands of this. This is a lifespan that we're talking about, and it's very delicate, in my opinion. It's very delicate because you have, I think it's great what the Reinsdorfs did last year. We have this announced, we are announcing a transition of power at a said date. But there's,
I think this is a kind and benevolent way of thinking about it that I appreciate. Go ahead.
I think there's too many people out there. Well, like when Jerry dies, and I'm just going to come out and say it. Like that's, I am never going to be in the game of rooting for that's insanity to me. Which, but at the same time, why wouldn't Justin Ishbia be looking at future tense, whether it's 2029, 2033, or 2027, where he's plotting for? He has the financial resources to do things on his own that the White Sox have never had before. And if the contract is already signed and the ink is dry, yeah, that he's the guy in waiting, I would be planning that way too. And it's going to be public. And that,
so maybe there's a way that it can be, that you he can like make it a loan. That it comes, yes, across as a loan, and my money will even gain interest as you hold on to it. Here's my 150, or every year I'll give you the 25 or 30 million that goes to Murakami, and you hold on to it. And then when I take over, I get the interest.
And by the way, the loan's a dollar. Like, I think it's like one of those type, kind of like the deal that Jerry has, like with the city. If they don't draw,
right,
is it 1 million?
Right.
That they don't have to pay the tax back to the city.
But this requires a good relationship.
It does.
And, it is delicate.
But you're not, it's very delicate, and I think it's important to note that because there's a lot of, I understand, like there's a to me there, you have to separate human life from being pissed off as a sports fan, okay? Mm-hmm. And I don't think sometimes it's just like why we need this to happen today. And
I understand.
That's not fair.
I understand, but it does feel like if this is potentially the situation, that the personal feelings and hesitancy to have that kind of relationship because of the delicacy could stand in the way of some things as a sports organization. Well, and we have seen that before.
Then that would be on Jerry Reinsdorf.
And we have seen it before.
We have, but it's a, I just think this is a different time. We have seen it before,
mm-hmm,
but we're guaranteed nothing. Jerry's 90 years old.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And there. No. Regardless, there's a date that says Justin Ishbia, whether Jerry's here or not,
2033. He has to have
it. Has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's a long way away.
It is in theory. It's not at the same time.
Right.
It feels a long time for us right now.
It needs to be a partnership.
100%.
Murakami could still be here. It's not that long.
Yeah, it's true. Depending on the length,
like,
of the deal.
Guys on the current roster, Colson Montgomery, if he gets, you know, a second contract, like, right, they could still be here.
And they, and them knowing that the ownership position is in a really good place would be extremely valuable for you moving forward. Ball players look at that stuff. They care about that stuff.
Look at how the White Sox have been perceived in these athletic surveys. It's not been great.
No.
Because they go to another place and you hear Gavin Sheets says, they did me, yeah, a favor. Okay?
All right. So that's a big ticket item of $150 million. There's a much smaller ticket item, which still apparently is too expensive for the White Sox right now. Ooh. I learned this yesterday on Hit and Run. We need to discuss next on The Score.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.